Who is this guy?
I'm Batman.
You sound like Cookie Monster.
I'm Batman. That's Batman.
I'm Batman.
Listen, I'm Batman.
Oof, you even sound like a bad guy.
I swear I am a good guy.
Okay, Mr. Batman.
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 That's what I said, Batman.
No, you're saying Batman. Listen, I'm Batman.
I'm Batman.
I want you to tell all your friends about me.
What are you?
I'm Batman.
This is the Batpod. Batpod.
Grab your bat microphone, it's time to start the show. Like a court of owls, the mystery is starting to grow. Let there be no debate, it's about to begin. Keen like Bruce Wayne, quick like Tim Drake, fierce like Damien. Grab your headphones, listen up, you know you love it. Drop the facade. Like the Dark Knight Detective, they've got some perspective. They're a pure crime-fighting collective. It's the Batpod.
Welcome to the Batpod. My name is Bill Beer, and joining me tonight, Jay Loving.
Good evening.
How's it going?
It's going pretty well.
That's good. That's good. So we have a all-new show tonight. We have Batman 93, Curse of the White Knight 8, and Batman 324, a little topic of the week, and Stump the co-host. And then right up front here, we have a voicemail from a listener and a comment. I say voicemail. Does that blow you away that we have our first voicemail?
It does. I didn't even know you were set up for that.
Well, it's an emailed audio comment. So, voicemail, email, audio comment. So, let's go ahead and head to our listener feedback.
The Batpod is a spoiler podcast. Please read the comics we're reviewing so you can enjoy the show.
We are a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network.
So our first is a Twitter comment, and it's from Sean Ross, who's actually ahead on the show before, Secret Wars and Beyond podcast. He says, look forward to hearing your coverage of Detective 1022, which we did last episode. For me, the addition of the Joker War element undermined everything that was working in this arc. To be honest, I'm pretty close to dropping this book. My question to you is, did you feel that the Joker element in the Two-Face arc took away anything from the story?
I don't think I would go that far.
No, I don't think I would either. I enjoyed how the interconnectivity of it. Can also see how somebody would be turned off about Joker because it's everything Joker all the time lately.
Well, yeah, and we've discussed that here before. Yeah. I don't want to keep hashing on it, but
I didn't particularly see it like that, but we appreciate the feedback.
Well, I can certainly see how somebody might feel that way. Yeah. I mean, I don't diss him for that.
No, not at all. So, and we appreciate you writing that comment, Sean. Anytime you have a question or comment, feel free, or whoever has a question or comment or anything, feel free to let us know, and we'll discuss it right here. So next, we have a voicemail from friend of the show and listener Rob Lewis.
Hey, Bill, AJ, this is Rob Lewis over at DC Now Podcast, and I just had to drop a little audio for you guys to describe my reaction to today's news. I am completely over the moon. I am so happy about this, and I hope you guys are too. Normally, I would share something like this with my brother, but he's still at work, so I reached out to the next two guys who I really hope are happy over what was announced today. It's the strangest thing. You know, I am a fan of all actors and all iterations of Batman. You know, I'm old school. I go all the way back to Adam West. But the news that came down the pike today was really exciting. I am so happy that in some form we will be getting Michael Keaton again. either as Batman or as Bruce Wayne, but Michael Keaton is back, baby. And boy, I could not be happier. You know, the first two movies that he starred in for Tim Burton, they were good, but I always felt that there was too much concentration on the villains and that Batman and Bruce Wayne were sort of so short. They didn't get the limelight that I felt they deserved. But that's my hang-up. And it's really funny because I was one of those guys. As a matter of fact, my brother was the one who dropped the news when Keaton was originally cast. I came home and he had left a copy of the New York Post on my bed, and he circled the picture of Michael Keaton with the question mark, Mr. Moms? And that's exactly how I felt. Mr. Moms? Are you kidding? Michael Keaton is going to be Batman? You know, he doesn't... I felt that he didn't fill the part physically, and I didn't know that he had dramatic chops. But boy, I was proven wrong, especially in the intense scenes where he did his acting through his eyes. Keaton had that look down pat, and he became my favorite Batman. So I was always disappointed when he didn't make that third movie and he stepped away from the role. I always felt it was a missed opportunity, just like not being able to see Billy Dee Williams as Two-Face. But that's another story for another time. But I am completely overjoyed by this news. I have so many questions. You know, what movies will he be in? What sort of role will he have? Will he really be in multiple DC Universe movies? We shall see. But man, this is truly an exciting time. I hope you guys are as happy as I am. We got Michael Keaton back, and this is fantastic news. And to show you how things come full circle, I reached out to my brother, but I didn't realize he was still at work. So I left him a little voice message that said, Mr. Moms, and I hung up. But Keaton is back, and I could not be happier. Also, before I sign off, I would like to pay my condolences to the Joel Schumacher's family. You know, his two Batman movies may not be everyone's cup of tea. They may not be the most popular in the series, but he made a contribution to the legacy, and for that, I am thankful. Rest in peace, Joel. You did good. You gave us two Batman movies, and we're overjoyed for it. All right, guys, I'm going to sign out. I didn't want to drag on too long. You know, me and my gravel voice, I think it annoys some people, but I just had to tell you how I felt and how I reacted when we received the news today that Keaton is back, baby. All is good.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Rob, for your voicemail. So what's your first reaction to that news?
Well, the first reaction, I think, was like a lot of people. It's like, what kind of a role is he going to play as Batman, given his age?
Yeah, exactly. And in the Flash movie.
Yeah. Well, and I have since heard that the Flash movie is going to be based a lot on the storyline Flashpoint, which I think you're familiar with. I think you've read
the play. Yes, yep.
So more than likely, he's going to be playing Thomas Wayne and not Bruce Wayne.
That's interesting.
Or likely to be playing Thomas Wayne instead of Bruce Wayne, if they're indeed going to use that Flashpoint as the basis for the story.
Yes.
I'm sure there will be changes and adaptations for bringing it to a screenplay, because you can't just do a comic exactly like it is in the comic into on screen.
No. And I thought maybe possibility it would be like a future, you know, Flash in the future, or some kind sort of like a Batman Beyond type future.
Right.
I didn't know if that was a possibility, but it sure is interesting.
It is, and I'm glad to see what they're going to do with it. I've never been one of these that jumps on the wagon of, oh, this person's not right for this role. This not person's right for this role. It's like, you don't know.
Right.
You do
until
not
you
know.
See it.
And there has never been one single actor, I don't think, I can recall, who, when they were announced as going to be playing Batman, didn't have a lot of blowback. Michael Keaton did, and then Val Kilmer, and then Christian Bale, and then people, and still a lot of people don't like Affleck as Batman, but...
George Clooney, you forgot him.
Well, I'm trying to... I try very hard to forget George Clooney, but... I mean, Clooney did as best as he could do, but he had a they had just bad script, and they tried to do something, I think, with that movie that they shouldn't have done.
Well, I heard some interviews most recently because the death of Joel Schumacher, that
right.
for that movie, the way they wrote the script and filmed it is they would get a toy that Warner Brothers was going to put out. And they said, film a scene around this toy, this action figure, or this playset, or whatever it was, which seems ridiculous to film a movie that way.
Right.
But yeah, I went to see those Schumacher movies. Batman and Robin, I really had a problem with when I went to see it. The Val Kilmer Batman Forever, I enjoyed, but there were still some things that bothered me, but it was better than having no Batman movies at all, I guess.
No, yeah, I would tend to agree.
Yeah.
And it's just, the first two movies were so good with Keaton.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it had a lot to do with Tim Burton as well. Schumacher has, you know, done a, if you look at his whole body of work, he's done some fantastic movies. I don't know, you know, what they were trying to do, especially... I mean, in Batman and Robin, it almost seemed like they were trying to capture the same campiness that the TV show had.
Right, yes.
But it just didn't work. I mean, you just can't do that again. You can't catch lightning in a bottle twice. And, you know, just some of the cheesy lines that Schwarzenegger had. Ice to see you. Okay. No.
I think that was a direct relation to Batman 66.
Right.
I think that's what they were going for that. So...
But anyway.
So, yeah. But thank you to Rob Lewis for your feedback.
Yes.
We really appreciate it. Anytime anybody wants to leave us a voicemail, feel free. We always like feedback and questions and that sort of thing. So, now, let's go ahead and head to our first book.
Tune in tomorrow. Same cat time, same cat channel.
Our first book tonight is Batman 93, your writer, James Tynion IV, artists, Gilliam March and Javier Fernandez, colors, Tamu Mori and David Barron, letters, Clayton Cowell, cover, Daniel Mori, variant cover, Francisco Matina, associate editor, Dave Wilgos, editor, Ben Abernathy. And in this issue, Batman meets the designer. We find out what the grand design with the Gotham Rogues actually was. Catwoman tries to save Bruce Wayne's money, but is double-crossed by the underbroker. Harley Quinn gets her throat slit by Punchline. And Batman and the designer have a duel with swords, with the Joker revealed as the designer, and Batman taking Deathstroke's sword through the leg. And her issue ends with the Joker with all of Bruce Wayne's money. So, last issue had a big cliffhanger that the designer showed up in Bruce Wayne's office. We sort of question whether that was at Wayne Manor or possibly at Wayne Enterprise. We do get the confirmation that it is his office at the new Tri-Corner Yards where the Wayne Enterprises is, and he made to look the office identical to his, I guess, study at Wayne Manor. So that's where that confusion kind of came in, because we were kind of discussing it, and we thought it might have been Wayne Manor, but...
Yes, I was fooled, because I thought it was Wayne Manor.
Yeah, because, as you said, it looked like, you know, where he was sitting when the Bat came in, and he first decided he was going to become Batman from year one, and...
Right.
So... And we do get an explanation here of what the master crime was going to be, the grand design. You have the Penguin becoming the mayor. We actually see what leads into that. The Riddler taking over Gotham City PD, humiliating, and it looks like killing Jim Gordon. Catwoman stealing Bruce Wayne's money. She becomes the richest woman in Gotham. And Joker actually killing Batman and Robin. Now, when all that was laid out here at the beginning, did you feel like any of those was off? Did you see? Did you feel like they all fit the characters?
Yes, for the most part.
The only one that sounded kind of odd to me at the very beginning was Joker killing Batman and Robin.
Yes.
And we find out later in the issue that that's the thing that's off.
Right.
That the Joker was never going to kill Batman and Robin because he doesn't want to do that.
No.
As Batman said, he would want to kill everybody else but Batman.
Exactly. Yeah, because Joker realizes it's this weird symbiotic relationship between the two, and neither can exist without the other.
That's what it seems like. Yeah, that's what it definitely seems like. I mean, I get the idea. We get the reveal that, you know, the designer was the Joker the whole time, and it apparently looked like the designer, who was the corpse of the original designer, was being controlled like remote-controlled, like video game style.
Right.
Somehow, because you saw in the background of the one panel of the guy using these joysticks or whatever. But were you surprised by the reveal that this was the Joker?
A little bit. I don't think I was surprised as much as I was kind of, I don't want to say disappointed, but I was kind of hoping it wouldn't be the Joker.
Hoping it would be somebody else. Another movie. Yeah.
Now, you messaged me a few days ago and asked me about Secret Files number 3.
Yep.
Well, I noticed they mentioned it here in this book. So, and you had texted me about that they hinted who the designer was in that book. I haven't read it. So what was it that was in there?
Basically, it was the Joker convincing Deathstroke to come to Gotham to be a part of his plan.
Okay.
Didn't read that book right away, but there was another podcast, Weird Science, that the host Jim had mentioned that issue kind of spoils who the designer is, and that they thought maybe that issue wasn't meant to come out before 93, that it was kind of meant to come out after 93. Because it basically said without saying the designer is the Joker, you could figure out Joker was behind getting all the assassins to Gotham. So, to me, it was a little disappointing that it came out before, because this would have meant, I guess it would have been a little more, I don't know if it was shocking to me, because at the beginning, we thought the designer was the Joker. We thought this guy was the Joker before we knew it was the designer.
Yes.
Because the way he talked and different things, and so.
But, yeah, I mean, no, I'm not disappointed. It was just interesting, but I didn't quite expect it to be the Joker.
So, what do you think the Joker War is going to be about? He has Bruce Wayne's money, and he tricked Catwoman, they say broke Catwoman into basically giving up all his money because she knew all the, you know, account numbers and that sort of thing, and she was going to put the money in her account, and then she gets double-crossed by the underbroker. What do you think the Joker's end goal here? Do we have any idea? I mean, obviously, he doesn't want to kill Batman because he could have already did that. Deathstroke could have took care of that.
You know, I've tried to think about that, and I don't see, I mean, whatever his final plan is, it's nothing I've been able to discern.
Yeah. Yeah, and what we've seen in Detective, that he's going to be using Two-Face. It sounds like he's going to be using the Rogues to do different things. I don't know exactly.
Well, and also something else that's coming up. You know, this Joker Wars is going to be kind of coming out simultaneously with the Three Jokers.
Yes.
Which is, if I'm not speaking incorrectly here, is part of continuity, because that was revealed in Justice League before we had the rebirth.
Yes,
stuff.
Yes.
So is that going to tie in with Joker Wars? I mean, there's all kinds of questions.
I'm not sure. The one thing that I've noticed since they announced the Three Jokers, and you know it's been super delayed, is they made it a Black Label book.
Right.
So I don't know if that means it's not, it would almost have to be in continuity, just because they have this plot thread left over, you know, Batman mentions, oh, there have been three Jokers, that sort of thing. I don't know his exact line there, but that's like been a hanging thread left over from that for, it's been a few years, at least.
Yeah, I mean, it was in Justice League right before they started Rebirth. And the Rebirth was in May of 2016.
Yeah.
So we're talking 4 years.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting. I'm going to check it out. I don't know what it's going to change or anything. I just don't have any clue. Any clue whatsoever. So a couple other questions I had this book is Batman pulls out a sword to confront the designer. And it almost looks like it's just the hand piece that he takes out of his utility belt, and then it, like, becomes a sword. Is that what you got from that?
Yeah, a little bit. It was kind of hard to say, I mean, but it looked like it sort of unfolded almost into a sword.
So that was kind of interesting. I kind of thought that was pretty cool that he's fighting with a sword. Don't see that every day.
No, you don't.
And then we get Catwoman, who apparently got shot. We don't. It's definitely not fatal because she's still moaning, but
right.
And Harley Quinn, who gets her throat slit, but she's not going anywhere either.
Oh no!
So, last thing that I want to mention is the cover and the artwork. The cover has, you know, the Joker sitting in a theater, a movie theater, it looks like, and he's holding up Batman's cowl to his face.
Right. That was part of a cow.
Yeah, part of a cow. And then he's all bloody and holding a gun. I thought that was a pretty creepy-looking image.
Yes.
And when I first read this book, you know, I was like, the art, something's up with the art. I don't know if what was going on until I saw, because I didn't take notice that there were two artists till the very end. Did you get the feeling, the jump back and forth between the art, or did it not?
It was subtle enough that it didn't, I mean, I noticed it, but it was subtle enough that it wasn't jarring.
No, I didn't think it was jarring either. It was like, I think it was mostly like the flashback.
Yes.
Yeah. So, kind of interesting. So, anything else you want to add about this particular book?
No, I'm just really interested in where this is going. I'm kind of, it's kind of a slow development story, but it's been interesting. But I've also been completely, you know, not being able to follow exactly where it's going or what's coming next. And I'm sure that's by design. But
right. And really, we have 8 parts so far.
I know.
8 parts, but not a lot has happened.
Right.
You know, it's about 4 issues. It seems like 4 issues worth of a story, really, because it's really been drawn out. And as I said before, that may be due to the double shipping, that sort of thing. Who knows?
Well, and also because of the, you know, the delay from the pandemic, but
oh yes, yeah,
yeah. I was the same way. I opened that book yesterday, and I'm like, part 8. It's like, no, it hadn't been that many parts, but it has.
Yeah, yep. It's been 8 parts, and we finally can get on with wherever this is taking us. And it's obviously going to be Joker War, so it'll be interesting to see where that goes and what goes on. So
yes.
So yeah. So, okay, we'll go ahead and head to our topic of the week.
The Batmobile. Let's go. Atomic batteries to power. Turbine to speed.
You're ready to move up.
Okay, welcome to topic of the week. And our topic this week is sort of a creator spotlight. As everybody knows, or if you didn't know, then you're hiding somewhere that you don't hear any comic book news, but Denny O'Neil passed away on June 11th, and as we all know, he was a significant part of Batman, writing Batman, being an editor on Batman for like close to 15 years. We have him writing a you know, Nightfall novel, and many, many other things. When you think of Denny O'Neil, what's really the first thing that comes to your mind?
I think the first thing for me, and just because I'm more familiar with that title, was he wrote the first arc, I think the first 5 issues of Legends of the Dark Knight.
Yes.
That one, and then secondly would be his role in the death of Jason Todd. I think he was writing about at that time, or he was editing.
Right. His role in from my understanding, if it was up to him, Jason Todd would have been dead for good. He wouldn't have been brought back like he was.
Right.
That's basically the majority of my experience, but going back and reading some of these older issues that I've done in the last few years or so, you know, you really see the change in the imprint that he put on Batman. You know, when he first was asked to take over the Batman books, the editors didn't talk to each other between Detective and Batman. They weren't interconnected. They weren't related. They didn't talk about characters or anything like that. So it was more of an interconnected universe after he took over. And of course, you go back to his dark origins and the Batman shows up. And of course, it's the darker, edgier Batman that we've seen today. And really, if you think about it, every version of Batman that's been in the movies, almost every version, I'll say, has Denny O'Neil's imprint on.
Yes. Yeah, he really touched a lot of things. And but yeah, even well beyond the Batman.
Oh, yeah.
It's interesting how when you come up with the name Denny O'Neil, almost certainly the first thing everybody thinks about is the things he did in writing and editing Batman, some of the changes. But people don't realize he did about as much things with Marvel as he did with DC. I mean, he was the editor over Daredevil back when Frank Miller was writing and doing the artist. And if you ask anybody that knows anything about Marvel about about the greatest runs on Daredevil, and that will be certainly one of them. So
absolutely. Absolutely. Marvel, he did some Spider-Man. You know, he did this issue of Superman versus Muhammad Ali. Of course, The Question. Who yes. can argue that The Question might be one of the greatest books that's ever been with Dennis Cohen?
Oh, absolutely. No question. Sorry.
We also get creation of some characters. We get Ra's al Ghul, Talia al Ghul, Leslie Tompkins, Azrael, yes. Richard Dragon. Although he didn't create these characters, issue number 234, Batman with Two-Face coming back, and Two-Face hadn't been seen. I think he made only like 5 appearances in the 40s and 50s. So he brought him back, made him more of a, you know, villain. He brought the Joker in issue 251, a more menacing Joker. He took, you know, Jerry Robinson's original look for the Joker with the green vest. He didn't have the orange vest, but it was a green vest and a tie. He made the Joker like we know today.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to mention things that he did. The biggest story that I really enjoyed when I was first reading comics was the Nightfall crossover, and we hadn't seen a crossover like that before.
Right. No, I agree.
I mean, it was through every Bat book. And I heard an interview recently that he actually wanted to kill off Bruce Wayne. He didn't just want to cripple him. He wanted to kill him off, but he was going to bring him back in like a year. The head of DC wasn't going for that. So he said he didn't know if he wanted to kill Bruce Wayne for good and replace him with Dick Grayson or what exactly. So it's kind of interesting. It's interesting to hear, like, if you heard any interviews with Denny O'Neil, you could just listen to that guy talk for hours.
Yes.
He had a lot of those old creators are like that.
Absolutely. Yeah, those guys will just, all kinds of stories.
Yeah, especially the early on, the stories in the 60s and how they didn't get along with this person or that person.
Yes.
I did hear a story that, when Denny was working for Marvel, they wanted him to wear a suit and tie to work. And he was complaining to Jack Kirby. He says, "Why do I need to wear a suit and a tie?" And Jack Kirby was like, "It's Park Avenue. You wear a suit and tie to work." And he says, "At that moment, I knew I wasn't it long in the cards for working at Marvel."
Right.
So, any final thoughts?
Just, like I say, he significantly contributed to the Batman lore, And yeah, he will be missed.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go ahead and head to our next book.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol, I can be incorruptible. I can be everlasting.
What symbol?
Something elemental, something terrifying.
Our next book is Batman, Curse of the White Knight, written and drawn by Sean Murphy with colors by Matt Hollingsworth, book 8. And in this book, Batman, followed by the Gotham GTO, goes after Azrael in a final showdown before he can destroy the Gotham Dam. But Batman incapacitates the GTO cars so that he alone can find and kill, yes, you heard me, kill Jean-Claude Valley, Azrael. But Dick Grayson is able to find Bruce before he can confront Azrael, and he makes an emotional plea for Bruce to handle this in the style of Batman and not as a murdering vigilante. Batman finds Azrael, and the two battle until Batman prevails. But he comes also to the understanding that being Batman is more important than being a Wayne, which he's learned that he is not part of the Wayne family. Then all of Wayne's billions are moved into nonprofit companies and agencies. Batman turns himself in to Gotham Police, and the story ends with Bruce sending for Jason Todd to talk as he awaits trial. This, of course, was the concluding book for this series, the second one that Sean Murphy has done in this White Knight storyline. What did you think of this, the way this ended?
I thought it was pretty interesting. I think it tied up things quite nicely. There were some shocking things. Well, let's put it this way. There are some shocking things if this was in regular continuity, especially right. Batman picking up an automatic weapon.
Yes.
We've seen that before, but it was in Batman the Cult, but it was like rubber bullets. But he's wants to kill, you know, Azrael. Oh, yeah. He's not
messing
around.
There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
He even says it, you know, that he has to die. And the only thing that stops him is, like I say, that Dick Grayson finding him and making that impassioned and emotional talk about, you know, you need to do this as Batman would do it, not as how you want to do it, as Bruce Wayne.
I thought that part of the story was incredible. I thought Dick Grayson giving him the talk, talking him into, you know, you're not a killer, this isn't the way to go, that they were almost like in opposite roles, you know? Not that Dick Grayson was ever going to kill somebody, but that the, you know, student is helping the mentor in this situation.
Right. Yeah, and at this point, Bruce is even of the opinion that, you know, anything he even says as much is, you're the better man than I am, which is, you know, kind of like showing that the student has now surpassed the master almost in this situation. But, you know, that talk was effective, and in the end, Bruce doesn't kill. He almost kills Azrael, but he stops his bleeding before he can bleed out. And yeah, there was just so much going on. I mean, this tied up a lot of things here. How did you feel about the ending where Bruce, I mean, having come to the realization that he's not really a Wayne, he's given all of his money over to nonprofit and charitable organizations?
It sounds like his role as Batman is over.
Sounds like it. It is, yes.
He gave up to the Gotham City Police. He gave up his fortune. You know, we always said, or maybe not we, but it's always been said that when Batman's parents were killed, that's when Bruce Wayne died. And this particular Bruce Wayne or Batman that took over at that point, it only had one goal, one set of, you know, thinking.
Right.
It seems to be that this particular story, this particular version, of course, it went in a different direction where he finds out he's not a Wayne, which would probably, if you think about it, would devastate Bruce Wayne the person.
Right.
So I don't know. This seems like an ending point, but then calling, you know, Jason Todd in at the end sort of makes you feel like he's handing the reins over or something like that. I'm not sure.
That was my speculation.
Yeah.
It's like, what did you want to talk about? And I think he wants to talk to me about Todd becoming the next Batman.
Yeah.
Which left this, leaves us now open for a third storyline. I know that Sean Murphy has said he's not going to be writing any Batman for some time. He's on other projects now.
Really? If it come out 3 or 4 years later, I mean, this still...
Well, yeah, that's...
This is one of the best, you know, I would say Elseworld, because now I do see that it has the Black Label stamp on it also. It's one of the better Elseworld / Black Label universes. I'll say universes because everybody in it is, it's almost like an alternate Earth, alternate version, but it's very, it's amazing that he did the writing and the art and it was this good.
Yes. No, Sean Murphy is one of the bright talents going right now in the industry.
And I don't have to preach that to you at all, so.
No, not at all. But I think other people are seeing that because this book is selling tremendously well and gotten all kinds of good reviews. And as I said back on a third or fourth issue when we talked about it, it's, to me, it's the best Bat book out right now. Of course, it's ended, but yeah, I mean, he left it open for a third, and even if I have to wait 2-3 years, I'm happy with that.
Oh, yeah, but, yeah.
And I'm sure if DC asked him to come back and do that, he would. He's not going to turn down that money.
Yeah, and I don't see them saying, okay, we're done with this, because it was pretty popular. I mean,
it was.
It's getting trades and a hardcover. I think the first one got a trade in like a deluxe hardcover.
Right.
So, yeah, I did enjoy this one a lot.
What did you think? They've kind of hinted it a little bit in the earlier books, but it was more so, more direct this time. What did you think about this almost romantic feelings that Bruce Wayne and Harley Quinn have for each other?
That felt a little odd.
It was all definitely different, yes. Yeah.
And her trying to save him at the end.
Right, she was going to help him escape, but he told her not to.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a little bit. It's like she's finally given up on Jack, that Jack's never going to stay around for long. And so it's almost like she's, okay, now I'm moving on to Bruce.
No, it was different. You're used to seeing Harley Quinn, and she's like this, you know, never serious character. And you see this version, it's a totally different character.
Yeah. Well, she's very serious in some of the Black Label books that they've had her in recently.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Anyway, I thought it was a very satisfying end to this arc, to another good story arc. I like it. They ended it in the way that if there isn't any more, it's okay. But if there's certainly room for something else.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So we will see, that's for sure.
Yes.
Let's go ahead and head to Stump the Co-Host.
Yay.
It's time for the Batpod Stump the Co-Host segment.
Okay, welcome to Stump the Co-Host. And always on Stump the Co-Host, if you get 2 questions correct, you will get the cash and prizes. And you know you're looking forward to those cash and prizes because it's been a while since you got them.
I am.
It's been a little while. So our theme this week is Mr. Freeze. Our first question is, 3 actors have played Mr. Freeze in the Batman 66 TV series. I'm going to name 4 actors. 1 I made up. You're going to tell me which one I made up. The other 3 played Mr. Freeze in Batman 66. Number 1, George Sanders. 2, Eli Wallach. 3, Otto Preminger. And number 4, Sammy S. Lewis.
That's an easy one. Sammy S. Lewis is the odd one out.
Yeah, I thought you may know that one. You're correct. Okay, I thought that was the hard one.
Not for somebody who's seen every 66, Batman 66 episode at least 3 times.
Yeah. But I liked the original the best, I think.
Which was Saunders? Yeah.
I believe so, yes. Did you have a favorite?
No. Looking at it now, Eli Wallach had the most ridiculous German accent of all of them.
Yeah.
I think they all did good. I don't have a particular favorite.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So our next question. Mr. Freeze's original name in his first appearance in Batman 121. I'm going to list 4 names. You have to tell me what his original name is. This is sort of cheese, easy question, but was his original name Mr. Freeze, Mr. Cold, Mr. Zero, or Mr. Below Zero?
It was Mr. Zero.
You are correct. 2 for 2. I thought I really had you on that first one.
No. Nah.
Man, didn't do a good job this week, so you've won the cash and prizes. How excited are you?
I'm very excited.
Very excited. You should be. You should be. Because you have won a free 6-month supply of Mr. Freeze's Popsicle of the Month Club. Yes, get these yummy popsicles that are nutritious and delicious and come in over 400 flavors, from chocolate to very berry to pistachio to almond butter. How excited are you?
I'm beyond words.
Beyond words.
Because I know something's coming.
But just be careful, you know? If you eat those popsicles too fast, you might get a serious case of brain freeze. I stumped the coast.
Okay. Yay, but I did get it this week. So.
Wow, yeah. Ah, I knew I should have went a little harder on that second question.
Well, look, I was a kid when the TV show came on, and I watched that every day. I don't know. And when I said I've seen every episode at least 3 times, I'm probably closer to 5 or 6. So.
Oh, yeah. Let's go ahead and head to our final book.
Come on, Robin. To the Batcave. We haven't one moment to lose.
Our next book tonight is going to be Batman number 324. Your writer is Lynn Wein. Penciler, Irv Novik. Inker, Bob Smith. Colorist, Glendis Oliver. Letter, Ben Oda. Editor, Paul Levitz. And before I get into this issue, I'm going to say I was the one that picked this back issue for this week. And the reason that I picked this one, not because it was one of my all-time favorite issues that I just enjoyed so much, because I did enjoy it. The reason that I picked this particular issue, because it was my first issue of Batman that I ever picked up.
Wow.
So let's go ahead and get into this issue. As the issue starts out, Catman activates a mechanism that begins pulling the adhesive cable trap back and forth, threatening to tear Batman and Catwoman limb from limb, and Catman departs. Batman using his Batarang to stop Catman, but all he managed to do is cut a piece of his boot off. Batman then cuts through his Batsuit and rescues himself before saving Catwoman by bouncing her off of the cables. As he takes him out of the death trap, Batman picks up a bit of Catman's boot heel left behind. Batman takes Catwoman to the Batcave, where he analyzes the soil on the boot and learns it came from the Ionian Islands near Greece. When Catwoman recovers, she insists on accompanying him, since the Egyptian herbs will have to be administered at once to save her life. Stopping here real quick, I just want to mention the two previous issues were part of the story, and you find out that Catwoman has this rare disease. These herbs will save her life.
Right.
And they both take off in the bat plane. In Greece, Catwoman is presenting the urns and the statuary that he had stolen the previous issue from the Gotham Museum to Andros Acropolis, a shipping magnate and Egyptian artifact collector who owns the Ionian Islands. The loot is hidden in a geyser, which erupts at time intervals, Catman hoping to be awarded an island they stand on, so they make it a getaway for wanted crooks that they can come and not fear of getting captured for a price, of course. Batman and Catwoman, having learned of Catman's whereabouts through an informant, arrive to fight Acropolis and his men. The magnet shoots Catman 6 times, but the mystic cloth in his costume saves his life. Acropolis leaves, telling Batman he's only trying to recover the artifacts for the United States, and he will return in an hour with an army to see whether or not they're still trespassing on the island. Grabs Catwoman and threatens to cut her throat unless Batman gives him the boat off the island. Catwoman fights back and pushes him into the mouth of the geyser, still holding the urns. Catman is engulfed in the steaming waters, and Catwoman is left holding part of Catman's cape in her hands. When the steam clears, both Catwoman and the urns are gone. Catwoman in pain faints. As we head back to Gotham some hours later, a doctor examines Catwoman and informs Bruce Wayne that her disease is in remission. Selina tells Bruce that she owes her life to the magical non-lives property of Catman's cape. And Bruce wonders if that possibly could be true. As I said before, this was a book that I originally picked up, and, you know, way back when, I didn't get every issue of Batman. I got it whenever I went to the store, and the store that I got them from was a video store / bookstore / comic shop. Right. So whenever I got in there, and at that point I would have been 9 years old, I would see a cover, and that's what I did. I picked up because the cover, and the cover has Batman coming out almost like a sewer drain holding an unconscious Catwoman. So what did you think about this particular issue?
I enjoyed it. I thought it had a lot of good interaction, especially between Bruce and Selina. I had a couple of questions because I'm not familiar. I haven't read a lot of the issues in the early 300s. I mean, obviously, Bruce knows that Selina is Catwoman.
Yes.
But I get the impression she doesn't know the reverse. She doesn't.
No.
She's dating Bruce Wayne, but she doesn't know that Bruce is Batman yet.
No, she doesn't know that. Like 20-some issues previously or less, she got released on parole, and she came to Bruce Wayne and said that she wanted to donate some money and be a part of Wayne Foundation, that sort of thing. And that's how this whole relationship started.
Right.
Batman and her had a relationship, but they never had a Bruce Wayne and Selina relationship. So,
right.
And, you know, he's had these relationships during this time and later throughout the 80s with different women. I think they mention, if not in this issue, in a previous issue about Silver St. Cloud.
Yes.
That happened over in Detective Comics. So yeah. The other aspect of this story is this version of Catman.
Yes.
Which is, he's kind of goofy looking, especially the ears on his costume. And he has the symbol, the C on the front, but his apparently got these, he has this suit that gives him non-lives, basically. What'd you think of this version of Catman?
Like you, I thought he was a little bit silly looking.
Yeah.
His ears look more like mouse ears or something like that.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
But again, I don't have a lot of familiarity with the history of this. I haven't read a lot of stories with him.
Yeah.
In there. So, but it, you know, interesting. It was not. It was another thing I thought detracted from the story, but he was certainly kind of a little bit on the silly side.
The one thing that I get the feeling from this era is it's very soap opera-ish. You know,
yes.
There's ongoing threads that go into each issue. Because there is even a scene in here, which I didn't touch on, is, you know, Commissioner Gordon is called in the middle of the night to a jewelry store, and they think it's this guy that's at Arkham.
Right.
So they always had little pieces like that. It doesn't go into what's happening, but that leads into the next story or in a few issues. And I always kind of like that. I didn't always pick up every issue, as I said, whenever I got in there, because I went with my grandparents or my parents or something like that.
Right.
So, yeah, this was a lot of fun.
It was. And the one part that literally made me laugh out loud was after those being on those cables that were moving, it pretty much tore their costumes to shreds.
Oh, right.
And he's back at the Batcave, and Selina's been unconscious, and she wakes up, and she's like under a sheet, on a bed. And Batman says, "Here, I kept one of your old costumes in my trophy room." I'm like, seriously, where the hell did you get that, Batman?
What is he? He make costumes of all his villains?
I don't know. He just somehow he had one of her old costumes.
And it fits
like,
her perfectly.
Yes, exactly. And her costume was interesting because it was still when she was wearing the skirt outfit.
Yeah, with the green cape.
With the green cape, yes.
That skirt goes up pretty high.
Oh, yeah. It's a, well, so she can fight with it. So
kick or distract Batman, whatever.
Yes. But that was just the humorous thing. Like,
Oh, yeah.
Just happened to have one of her old costumes with her.
And the death trap was kind of, you know, the sticky adhesive cables. Death trap.
Yes.
Which was interesting. And she's already, like, injured. And he bounces her. He, like, projects her like a slingshot and hopes she lands in a soft spot.
Yes.
Yeah, so it was entertaining, that's for sure.
It was. I enjoyed reading it. Yeah. I did.
So, and I love the cover. That's...
Yeah, it was a good cover.
Yeah. I mean, what else would a supervillain want that his own island in a foreign country?
Exactly. That he can sell land to other supervillains.
Yeah. There you go. I notice also, it wouldn't be anything for Batman to pick up and go to some foreign country. You know, in the 70s and 80s, he would just jetson off to a foreign country really quick.
Yep. Well, they didn't have the problems with getting through TSA like we have today.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, imagine not. So, yeah. So, yeah, that was our books for tonight. So I guess we'll go ahead and get out of here.
If you'd like to contact us and be part of the Batpod, our email is batpodpodcast@gmail.com. Our Twitter is @pod_bat. If you listen to us on Apple Podcasts, please consider giving us a review. We'd really appreciate it. Lastly, a big thank you to those who have liked and retweeted the show on Twitter or Facebook.
So, we had some good listener feedback. We appreciate everybody that wrote in or called in. We'd like to hear more feedback, actually. Got some Batman, you know, Batman White Knight. A nice tribute to Denny O'Neil, which was one of the great Batman / comic book writers in general. And of course, we got the Stump the Co-host, which you didn't get stumped.
I know.
It's amazing.
Unusual.
And enjoy those popsicles. So until next time, same bat time, same bat channel. We will see you later.